Hello, I'm Lisa Van Raemdonk. There won't be a test about that later. I think I'm known as Lisa Van in Colorado, or Kelfo Lisa, so I better not change jobs or I'll lose my identity. So thanks for coming to listen to us talk about some things that I think are pretty near and dear to all of us. And what I'm going to hope right now is to take our plane up a little bit higher in the sky and talk a little bit about structure of governmental public health and thinking about this language, I think is a thread that you'll definitely hear of regionalization and what we call regional approaches and shared services in local public health, local governmental public health. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So just a quick overview, I'll talk about Colorado governmental public health system, a little overview of our project, and then we'll talk about sort of what we see as the political implications currently. I think one of the interesting things about the political implications of all of this is that it's evolving. So sort of what you hear today and what we sense today, what we hear from our folks today, changes with the times, and so this should be a reoccurring evaluation and understanding of where the politics are influencing. I think it's always important to understand the background of Colorado as a state. We are a decentralized state. We have a very strong county structure. Local control is a fundamental value of our counties. We have sort of that Western mentality. I'm not from Colorado, so it is different than the Midwest for sure. Our boards of health, we have one for every public health agency in our state. We have 64 counties and 54 public health agencies. Our boards of health in many, many, many of our agencies are three elected officials. So you can imagine the political ramifications and implications of having three elected officials that tell your public health director what their budget will be, in some cases tell them what programming they will and will not do, and certainly have things besides what Pat alluded to, things besides the overall health of their community in mind. Not to say that they don't have good intentions, but there are certainly other things for them to worry about than the health of their community. Our population range in our jurisdictions for our public health agencies is from 575 to 1.3 million. And while that seems enormous, I would suggest that that's not all that strange, especially in Western states, that we do have urban cores and then we have these very rural and frontier areas. And then the land size, also fascinating to me, 32 square miles is our tiniest little county public health agency, and 10,000 square miles is the largest. So what public health looks like when you have, I think it's 150,000 people in 32 square miles, and what it looks like when you have 50,000 people in 10,000 square miles. Public health is very different in these places. And then topography and really our geography, I think, should never look at a flat map of Colorado. It makes absolutely no sense to do so. We have contiguous counties that there is no road in between those two counties because it is all national forest land, it's mountains. So really understanding where the roads are, where the towns are, and where the mountains are in Colorado is important. And especially when we're talking about regionalization and regional approaches, you certainly can't just start drawing lines around counties and saying, why don't y'all work together and rent a blimp in order to move your WIC educators from one county to the other. We've had a lot of change in Colorado public health in the past several years. In 2008, we passed a law that changed our system from two types of public health agencies, an organized health department and a nursing service. And we made everyone a public health agency, and we're really in the implementation phase of that. What does that mean? If you think about, I'm a fan of history, if you think about the history of public health in Colorado, it really began with nurses going to mining camps. And so it makes sense that our frontier counties, our rural counties, have really been focused on public health nursing. But with this law and all of the components of it, there really is this sense of looking at the much more broad set of public health services to be provided in counties. And the biggest question about that is, how do you do that in our very small rural and frontier areas? How do you ensure that they have environmental health services, nursing services, and a broad array? One of the common answers to that is, well, you just regionalize. So Just quickly, we fall into the category of public health systems and services research, and certainly in that portfolio of Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. But this particular project also falls under the public health law research rubric, and that we're looking at the scientific study of law and legal practices in population health. And I would say in our world, you know, the public health law folks at Temple have this separation of varieties, categories of public health law, and we really feel like we fall into this infrastructural public health law, where we're looking at the laws that establish the powers, duties, and structure of public health agencies. So just to house sort of where our world sits, our project. So like I said, when we're looking at the vision of every person that lives in Colorado having a similar set of basic core public health services available to them. That's the big vision. The question is, how do you do that? One of the common answers to that is you regionalize. You tell public health agencies that they have to get to a population of X amount, for example. Team up until you've got 50,000 people. Well, I got to tell you, that's like 3/4 of our rural areas of Colorado would have to be one public health agency. So that's not a reasonable answer, I think, in our rural and frontier areas. The problem is that there is not a lot of information to then answer the question of what else do we do? What is a more realistic and practical answer? And that our local officials, public health, and elected officials are making decisions about this all the time without proper information, without really information about what works best, and really without even information about what are the options. So we started with a very simple concept of, let's just describe what's going on. Let's look at what regional approaches are already happening across our state, see if we can think of categorizing them, and then the longer term is working with states like Massachusetts to look at, do we have similar typologies of regional approaches that then we can pull into research and say, here's our 5, 10, however many categories. Now we can actually start comparing them. Where do they work best? And looking at them as interventions, as system change interventions. I'm gonna bump through. So one of the things we did is look at our law of 2008 from the legal perspective and the practice perspective. When we wrote it, we hadn't put on the lens of regional approaches for a lot of political reasons. We were writing an entire rewrite of the Public Health Act in Colorado in about a month and a half. Afterwards, put on this lens of regional approaches and said, what does our law allow us to do? And we found a few things that generally, legally, it does a pretty good job of allowing us to create district health departments and do some regional work. When we looked at the practice side of things and said, practically, as a public health director, do you feel like you could point at the law and say, this allows me to do regional work? We actually found 52% of the 73 clauses that we found that were related to regional approaches were positive. We're saying you can do things together. There is not a legal impediment. But we did have 23% that implicitly discouraged. So 20% that discouraged. So this 20% really are things like do a county health assessment. When you're talking about that unit being in the county, that is potentially discouraging than a multi-county approach. So I'm just gonna buzz through some of these things so we can get to what we looked at in phase 3. So this is where we actually did a survey to try to capture as many regional approaches as we could possibly find. The requirements are it had to be local public health department to local public health department, that kind of work. And it had to be something that was ongoing. We did an immunization clinic together. It had to be an ongoing program. And these are the categories of services that we found ongoing programs in. I've pulled emergency preparedness out of this because we have a whole system of regional emergency preparedness that we've done a report on in the past that we know about. We wanted to find out what we didn't know about. So it does not include regional services. And then we asked, how many other counties are being served in this? Is this a 6-county region? Is this just one county? And you can see in most cases, it's just a couple of counties coming together. This is not creating large regions where you're going to get anywhere near that 50,000 population number. And then we mapped. We asked them, are you the lead or are you receiving services? So if you look at this map, the yellow counties are only leading approaches. So they are always the one that is providing services to other counties in their area, other agencies in their area. The sort of gray purpley ones, those are the ones that are always receiving. They're always the partner. They're never the lead agency. And then the brownish ones are doing both. The darker ones are doing both. They have some programs where they're leading and some programs where they are the partner, where they're receiving services. So what you start to see, and if I could overlay our mountains onto this, you would see some natural regions happening, some natural hubs of agencies that have higher capacity than others. I'll give the example of Kit Carson and Prowers. Both of them have enough capacity that they are able to provide services in their region. But note that they are not only providing, they're also receiving some services. And I think that's one of the biggest things we learned, is that this is not a all or nothing. This is usually strategically about a program. I don't have this program or this service available in my area. My next door neighbor has the capacity to do it. We're going to do something together. I think Clear Creek, which is sort of in the middle, if you look at Park County, just above Clear Creek, is right on the edge of the Denver metro area, and they are fascinating. They have programs where they are the lead. They're doing everything. They have programs where they are receiving. And I think the ability for them to not just be lumped into a big, we drew a box around a bunch of counties, you all have to work together, but for them to think very strategically so that they can create programs that are sustainable, that it what it costs is less than what they can get in terms of funding. That flexibility has really helped them be smart about the work that they do. We asked about why you started this this particular approach. Many was the service was not previously available, which I think is terrific. Not necessarily driven by funding first. Funding was number two. and then the fact that there was a local champion, someone that saw that there was an issue, saw that there was a funding possibility, and moved forward. Now, the questions that I think Julie was raising about who is that local champion, who should that local champion be politically, are very important questions. And then we asked who was involved in the development of this. And one of the things that we noted is that attorneys were often not involved in the development of these regional approaches. We asked if they started with a legal instrument. Did you draw up an MOU right away? A little over half said that they did start that way. But you can tell that they moved in that direction. Once they started working together, they started realizing we actually need a formalized legal document here, whether it's a liability issue, whatever. And then we asked if there were any legal issues that impeded their work. And almost everyone said no. Which, to me, I think really needs some more dive, a little bit of a deeper dive here. What are we really defining as a legal issue? Once we started talking with these folks and saying, well, what about liability? Your nurses in someone else's home in a county, for example, they said, oh yeah, well, that has happened. We've dealt with that. But they weren't defining these things as legal issues. And I think while they were not defining them as legal issues, then they were not seeking their attorney's assistance. So there's definitely some work here. I think our future is all of what you heard from Pat. It's accreditation, it's fiscal issues, it's certainly turnover and retirement, it's workforce issues, it's accreditation. And I would say that in addition to regionalization, regional approaches and shared services is this idea of building health and human services departments that I would also say is under research that we don't know about the effectiveness about that. And then for us, local control will always be a major concern. I think language is really important, informed decision making. The minute you say regionalization, all of a sudden it's a top-down approach and it's not about where the community starts. So I think that language for us has been really key. And how do we retain our local control but have some level of system consistency? I think finding this very careful balance is really important for us. The sense of power, where does the power lie, and really understanding who should be the lead and who should take control of these situations. So I'm going to toss it over to Massachusetts and Justine for an even deeper dive into when communities actually start talking about doing this work, what does that look like?